interesting to figure out what people get out of the things that I talk about. I've been here for quite a while, talked about lots of different stuff. And it's interesting for me when people have been here and then they move away and then I get a chance to visit with them, which I did just the other week with Fred and Monica Rousen were up. And I had a chance for you tonight to have a supper with them, and it was a great time. And Fred said to me, well, he said to me actually a couple of times already, he said, you know, Alan, everywhere I go, you know, we're kind of finding a church, and now we've found a home church. And I tell that preacher just what you always told us, and that is God loves it when his kids get together for a party. And that's what Fred got out of 10 years of listening to me preach. But you know what? I'm actually very happy about that. Because I really do believe that. I really do believe that the King of the universe absolutely loves it when his kids get together and have a party and have a good time and just laugh together and eat together and have fun together and do all of those good things. I mean, it's deep within the center of my theology. So you can imagine how happy I was when studying for this passage, I was reading Tom Wright, one of my favorite theologians, one of the foremost theologians of the contemporary world. And he said, you know, the Christian life in the Bible, it's sort of got two pictures, two themes, two dominant images of what the Christian life is. And the first one, he said, is a journey. And I like that because we've got that right on our sign, right? We talk about pursuing the God life. It's a picture of a road. And the idea is that we're on this journey to get to know God better and for the Holy Spirit to transform us into the image of Christ. So that made me happy. But what he said next made me really happy. He said, and the second dominant image, get this, of the Christian life is, you guessed it, a party. A party. I was so happy because it fits with us, doesn't it? I mean, we love to party around here. We love roast festivals where we all get together with all of the sites and all of the services and get together and eat and visit. And Ro has a theme for us, usually about the grace of God or the love of God and how we share it or how we've experienced it. I mean, we just love being together. This afternoon, what are we going to do? We're going to have a party. It's going to be awesome. We've got horse-drawn sleigh rides. We've got the stuff to make s'mores. We've got some hot chocolate coming. We're going to have a big bonfire. We were out shoveling the snow and making sure the fire was in place yesterday. And it's just going to be a great time. As a matter of fact, if you want to bring some of your own boiled up blood plasma, which people call wieners, you can roast those for yourself if you want to eat a little bit more and stuff. But it's going to be a great time. Hey, if you are a guest with us this morning, I hope you come, because it's just one of the great ways that we get to know each other. But it's this marvelous thing that we love to party together. It's a good thing. So, we're going through the good news of Jesus according to Luke. See if I can stop myself coughing through this. But watch out in the front door, I might spit it at you by accident. This is get a little worked up here, you know. We're going through the good news of Jesus according to Luke, and we're working our way through, and today's passage is all about parties. Makes me so happy. And if I want to burn one thing into our hearts, if I want to get one thing into our mind, if I want us to walk out with one sort of phrase ringing in our ears, it's this, that the kingdom is a party, and grace is on the menu. I mean, that's the good thing about parties, isn't it? It's the people that we get to be with and kind of what we're going to eat and drink. That's kind of an important thing, too. I mean, the kingdom is a party, and you want to know what we're going to eat. You want to know what we're going to drink. You want to know what the menu is. It's grace. It is the undeserved, awesome treatment of God upon us, where he pours out his love and his goodness and his kindness and his mercy, which he said, like Griffin said, that we're all included, God of the universe putting his arms around us. That's what's on the menu, is grace. Grace. So let's dig into the passage a little bit here. And it starts off, and you'll see it, where Jesus pouring on grace upon grace. I mean, he just pours it out. Let's take a look. Excuse me. One Sabbath, when Jesus, probably after you'd done in the synagogue, one Sabbath when Jesus went to eat in the house of a prominent Pharisee. Remember the Pharisees? These were these guys that really took their religion seriously. They really figured if we can just get everybody straightened out, if we can just get everyone obeying the law, if we can just get everybody being a good Jew, then God is going to deliver us from Rome, okay? So he's in the house of a prominent Pharisee, a big guy. But he was being carefully watched. There in front of him was a man who suffered from an abnormal swelling of his body. Dropsy, some of your translations will say. Jesus asked the Pharisees and experts of the law, hey, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath or not? But they just remained silent, so taking hold of the man, he healed him and he sent him on his way. Then he asked them, if one of you has a child or an ox that falls into a well on the Sabbath, will you not immediately rescue it? Will you not immediately save it? Will you not immediately deliver it? Now, here's what we need to understand about this passage. Jesus is having this meal with this prominent Pharisee, and here's the deal. It is just one great big setup. They're trying to set Jesus up. You see, the Pharisees have been out to get Jesus for quite some time. If you go all the way back to chapter 11 and verse 53, you'll see that the Pharisees decided, okay, this is it. We're going to get this guy. We're going to shut him down. We're going to turn the people against him. We're going to find something in his theology or in something that he does or in something that he says, and we're going to nail him because this isn't right. He's leading our people away. And so on Sabbath, after synagogue, people would often get together to eat, kind of like us all going up for lunch together or whatever the case may be. And Jesus got invited to one of these house parties. But I want you to take a notice of the little phrase in there that says that he was being carefully watched. You see that there? You see that little phrase? That's a very special word. And it means to watch ominously. Like to kind of, you know what it's like? It's like an undercover cop going into a party or something and watching what everybody does and kind of taking down his notes so that he can bring it up in court later. That's what that word means, right? So this was not a friendly get-together. This was an incredibly stressful time where suspicion runs deep, and they're not having Jesus there for a good time. They're having him there so that they can trap him, so that they can conspire against him, so that they can get him. And at this party, they invited a guy who had this disease in the Bible. It's called dropsy or edema. And it's the accumulation of fluids and it causes swelling in the body. It looks to me like a really nasty disease. How'd you like to wake up and have your leg look like that in the morning? So this guy had this condition, okay? Now, here's what you need to know. Back in Jesus' day, as near as we can tell, the teachers used to believe that this was particularly associated with immorality. They kind of figured that this was the way that God was punishing these people for an immoral life, for not obeying the law, for not being clean, for doing everything bad. And so here's this guy who kind of looks like that. He's stuck in the middle of this dinner party with all of these Pharisees, and every Pharisee around that table says, yeah, you want to know why this guy's like that? He's like this because of sin in his life. Okay, that's the deal that's going down here. And what they wanted to do is see what Jesus would heal on the Sabbath. Now, you remember last week, Ryan did an awesome job explaining about the attitude of the Jewish leadership about healing. 6 days you can come and be healed. On the Sabbath, you just come and you just say your prayers, okay? So that was kind of their attitude. So they were setting Jesus up. Well, we already know what Jesus is going to do. Because we've got some sense about the character and the love and the goodness and the mercy of Jesus, don't we? He's going to heal this sinner. He's going to pour his grace on him. He's going to give him something that every Pharisee in that table didn't think that he deserved. He is going to bring forgiveness and healing and wholesomeness to this guy. But before he does that, he takes this whole deal on head on. And so he says to these Pharisees, hey, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath or not? Now, they knew, and Jesus knew, it's perfectly not against the law of God. But it says that the Pharisees were silent, and there's a couple of reasons for it. Number one, if they said, yes, it is lawful to heal. It's okay. then this trap that they'd set to Jesus would have been sprung and it would have been wasted. But if they said, no, you can't heal this guy, then they look and are shown up for who they are. It's kind of these heartless legalists that will even use a person's sickness to just try and trap Jesus. And so it says that they were just silent. Well, Jesus just walks up, lifts this guy from where he was crouched, wraps his arm around him, and he's healed. And then he sends him on his way. And then he turns to these Pharisees and he basically says, listen, you guys, don't you understand what the Sabbath, this day a week off, is really all about? It's really all about God making sure that people have a healthy rhythm in their life. It's really all about bringing God's healing to your life so you have a day to just rest and rejuvenate and be healed and spend time with people that you love and that you care for. That's what the Sabbath's all about. Besides, wouldn't you rescue even one of your animals? Now, that's obvious stuff. That exercise of grace, that giving people what they don't deserve, that pouring out of the love of God on people, that one's pretty obvious. But in this story and in this passage and in this event of the life of Jesus, there's a hidden grace. There's a hidden kindness. For a long time, I didn't catch on, but about 15 years ago, it was on a Friday. It was after a prayer meeting, and I was actually studying this passage, and all of a sudden, it hit me like a ton of bricks that there's a hidden grace right here because Jesus shows grace to some people who'd set themselves up as enemies. The Pharisees. Now, Ryan and I, we have theological debates on a very regular basis, as you might imagine. And the fundamental issue is that Ryan is an anarchist. He votes NDP and all kinds of stuff like this. I mean, he's just the kind of the guy he is. And he's always trying to stick it to the man, you know. If anyone's got anything in power, any authority or something, well, you know, well, that can't be right, you know. So Ryan is always on about, like he was last week, and the week before, and 3 months ago, and 6 months ago, and the time he preached before. I mean, all he ever talks about is the grace of God for sinners, for people who recognize that they're in a mess, for people who recognize that they've wandered away from God, for people that feel broken and they feel like they can't. That's all he blabs on about. But he wants to stick it to the man, you see. And so he always says to me, hey, here's the deal. I don't worry about people that are sinners that are out there messing up. I worry about people in the church. I worry about people like you, Alan. People who kind of feel like they've got it together and all this kind of stuff. And I try and say, Ryan, your view of grace is far too limited. It's even bigger than you imagine. There's even grace for people who think they've got it together, who people who think that, well, you know, maybe God's looking at me on his team kind of thing. Because look what happens here. That's exactly the spot that these Pharisees were under. Now, Jesus knew, these guys are out to get me. These guys are out to judge me. These guys are out to condemn me. These guys are going to try and turn the people against me. These guys want me dead. And when they invite me to a dinner, it's not because they enjoy my company. It's so they can find another excuse, so they can write down a thing. Well, this is what he said, and we tripped him up here, and we got him here, and obviously he's a heretic, and obviously he needs to be condemned, and Jesus knew this. And he walked in there anyhow. And Jesus sees this guy that all the Pharisees are watching and saying, yeah, we know why this guy's got this dropsy. We know why he's sick like this. It's because of his sin. Let's see what Jesus does about it. Jesus sees this setup, and he goes anyhow. He walks into their midst and he says, listen, I'm going to eat with you. And Ryan's explained to us here a couple of weeks ago, remember that when you eat in that culture with somebody, you're saying to them, I don't have anything against you. There's no barrier. I want you to be family. And Jesus walks into these people who want nothing more than the death of Christ and to judge him and condemn him. And he sits down with them and he says, listen, I'm going to put myself at risk. I'm going to put myself at risk of your judgment. I'm going to put myself at risk of your condemnation. I'm going to put my life into your hands in this compassionate act of loving you in just the hope that maybe, just maybe, one of you, two of you, some of you, maybe somehow you'll capture the heart of God and you'll understand that it's about grace, that it's about love, that it's about kindness, that it's about forgiveness, that it's about coming to God and not looking down. I just have hope, and so I'm willing to risk that somehow maybe I'll break through the hardness of your hearts. Man, that's such a challenge to me. I mean, I'm happy to take the grace of God. And I'm happy to share the grace of God, the goodness of God, the love of God with people who are nice to me. But I'm not so keen on it if somebody makes themselves my enemy. I mean, the people, the religious people of the day, they were scandalized that Jesus would eat with sinners. You know what I'm scandalized by? That Jesus would eat with people who are just out to get him. I mean, would you do that? Would I do that? God does that. Because it's grace upon grace. It's grace to an enemy. And so Jesus, there he is at this dinner party. And everyone he speaks to and everyone he touches and everything about, he just floods the place with grace. He just heals this guy. He just loves on these Pharisees. He just tries to put himself in their hands in the hope that he'll turn around. Well, why does he do that? I'll tell you why he does that. He does that because he will not say no to any kind of a party. He will show up right there because the kingdom is a party and grace is on the menu. Grace is on the menu. Now, he wants to drive this home. In case they weren't getting it from his actions, he wants to make sure that they understand what's going on. And so he tells them a story about pride and humility. And again, it's talking about a party, our theme for the day. And so excited about this, but it's an incredible party. He's going to tell a story about a wedding party. And this is what he says. He says, listen, he noticed how the guests picked the places of honor at the table. And he told them this parable. He told them this story. Hey, when someone invites you to a wedding feast, don't take the place of honor, for a person more distinguished than you may have been invited. And if so, then the host who invited both of you will come and say to you, give this person your seat. And then humiliated, embarrassed, and red-faced, you'll have to take the least important place because the only place left is right there beside the bathroom. But when you're invited, instead, take the lowest place so that when your host comes, he'll say to you, friend, move up to this better place. Then you will be honored in the presence of all the guests. For those who exalt themselves will be humbled. And those who humble themselves will be exalted. Now, when we first read this, we see, well, man, this is a lesson about humility. This is saying when you get invited to a party, you get invited over to somebody's house, you get invited to a banquet, you know, somebody's wedding, don't go sit at the head table right off the top. Okay, that's kind of a bit of good news. And it's actually ancient wisdom. Back in the Old Testament, the book of Proverbs, there's a proverb that says a similar thing. Hey, don't exalt yourself in the king's presence. Don't claim a place, in other words, a seat, right, among great men. It's better for him to say to you, hey, come on up here, than for him to humiliate you before a nobleman and saying, hey, get out of that seat. So it's good wisdom. You know, you go to a party, take a little humility with you, and then you're going to be okay. But that's not the point that Jesus is really making. You see, the real lesson on humility, to get that, we've got to pay attention to verse 7. And we've got to pay attention to verse 11. Because in verse 7, it says that Jesus told them a parable. A parable is a story with a deeper meaning, right? As a matter of fact, it means a parallel, a parable, right? It means to go alongside. What it's saying is a parable is something where you've got this story that happens, and that's kind of a nice story, it's kind of cool, but the real meaning runs beside it. What Jesus is really getting at runs beside it. So it's not about going to a wedding feast and taking a good seat. What's it about? Verse 11 tells us, and verse 11 is very clear. When those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. You see, the Pharisees had set themselves up in a seat of honor. They thought they were a little bit better off than everybody else. Pretty easy in Jesus' day, and I dare say in today's day, that if you are wealthy and you are powerful and you know the Bible and you go to church every Sunday and you maybe go to a life group too and all these things, pretty easy for this insipid idea to seep into our hearts, maybe secretly. Well, you know, we're just kind of a little cut above the rest. Very easy for these Pharisees to think and imagine that in God's sight, they were way further ahead than the poor who God hadn't blessed and those who hadn't been trained properly in the laws of Moses, and let alone they were working like dogs, so they didn't really have time to live out all the stuff that the Pharisees thought that they should. Very easy for them to put themselves forward and say, God, you're kind of lucky to have me. Thank God I'm not like this sinner. Remember from a few weeks ago? You see, Jesus is saying, when you do that, the king is going to come and say, get out of that seat. See, what Jesus wants us to understand is a very plain thing. He wants the Pharisees to understand, he wants us to understand, that people that think they're going to get invited into the wedding feast and this party called the kingdom of God by being morally and socially and better connected into other people are setting themselves down in this place where they can look down on other people and we can maybe think we're a cut above. Jesus says, listen, when you put yourself in that seat of honor, you miss the boat. And the king's going to come and say, hey, you need to go down to a lesser seat. Get out of that chair. Because there's one way to get into this party. There's one way to get an awesome seat at the banquet. There's one way to participate in this marvelous feast that God has prepared for us. And that is that the host, the king of the universe, God himself, comes to us and say, listen, I've got this party going on. And just because I love you, just because I care about you, I've got a seat for you at the banquet table. And it's an awesome seat. It's right close to me. And you're going to get to see everything that's going on. And we're going to laugh together and visit and enjoy each other and dance. Won't you come? Won't you just come to this party? You just have to say yes. Just because I love you. Just because I want you there. The wedding seat at this party, this feast, is simply gained by saying yes to Jesus with the invitation to come and be the bride of Christ, to give yourself to Jesus. And why is that? I'll tell you why that is. It's because the kingdom is a party. And grace, undeserved love and mercy and kindness of God, is on the menu because he wants to pour it into ourselves just because he loves us. Now, Jesus, he really wants them to get this. He says, okay, I've kind of demonstrated and I've told you one story, but I really want to make it very, very plain to you. So I'm going to tell you another story just to make sure you really get this. And it's a story about the greatest party of all. Jesus said to his host, listen, when you give a luncheon or a dinner, don't invite your friends, your brothers or your sisters, your relatives, your rich neighbors. If you do, they may invite you back and you're just going to be repaid. But when you give a banquet, when you throw a party, when you have a bunch of people over, when you're going to eat and drink and dance and laugh and all of this good stuff that we love to do, when you do that, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, the people that don't expect to be invited. The people that figure they'd never get a seat at the table. And then you'll be blessed. Although they cannot repay you, you'll be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. And one of those at the table said, oh, we'll talk about that. Blessed is he who will eat at the feast of the kingdom of God. Blessed is he who comes to this party of God and eats at this incredible feast. It's going to be amazing. And Jesus says, listen, I'm going to tell you a story. A certain man was preparing a great banquet, and he invited many, many guests. He gave them lots of notice because it was going to be a big party. It was going to be the party of the century, third in a million. And so he gave them notice way ahead. He gave them invitations. And then the time for the banquet came. And so he said to his servants, go and tell those people who have been invited, come, because now everything's ready. Now the party's going to happen. But they all alike began to make excuses. The first said, I just bought a field and I got to go and see it. Please excuse me. And another one said, I've just got 5 yoke of oxen. I got to try them out. I got to plow the field. I got to get it ready for planting. Now, please excuse me. And another said, hey, I just got married. I've been waiting for this for a long time, so I can't come. Then the servant came back and reported this to his master, and the owner of the house became angry. And he ordered his servants, he said, listen, go out quickly into the streets and the alleys of the town and bring in the poor, the crippled, the blind, and the lame. Sir, the servant said, what you've ordered has been done. They went out, we brought all these people in, but there's still room at the banquet. There's still room at your house. There's still empty spaces at the table. There's still lots of food to go around. Then the master told his servant, then I tell you what you're going to do. You go out to the roads and the country lanes and you compel them to come in. You do everything that you can to get anybody who will possibly at all say yes to the invitation. You compel them to come in so that my house, I love this, so that my house will be full. I tell you that not one of those who are invited will get a taste of the banquet, those that said no. It's a whole thing about inviting outsiders. And the first little portion there says, listen, don't be selfish in calculating who can reward you back when you have a party. Instead, invite everybody, especially those that don't feel, that never get invited to parties. Invite them. But really, that practical lesson, once again, is just a prelude for what Jesus really wants to talk about. Because he really goes on to tell a story all about mistaken priorities. There's something you've got to understand to really get to what's going on here. I've got to give you a bit of background, okay? For the Jewish people, there was a couple of things that really let them know that they were in God, the apple of God's eye. And there were a couple of things. Number one thing was the land. Because this was the promised land, right? So this is the land, you know, and Joshua went in, they conquered and all that stuff, came out of Egypt. God gave a land, you know, certain strips of land to every tribe, and that land had to be passed on down because the land was a symbol of God's blessing, a land flowing with milk and honey. And so this is why it was so upsetting for the Jewish people to have Rome govern them, because it was a statement to them that God is not happy. So the land is a big, still is today, right? I mean, there's still wars over the land of Israel, right? Because the land, very, very important, is the symbol of God's blessing. And so when these guys say, hey, you know, I just bought some land, or I've just bought some oxen to work the land, what they're really saying is, listen, we're kind of counting on having the land as symbolizing that we've got the blessing of God, right? So the first thing they counted on was the land. We know that we belong to God and God's happy with us because we've got this land. Second thing was their familial relationships, their family. They were proud that they had the blood of Abraham flowing through them. We are children of Abraham, and we marry children of Abraham, and we have children of Abraham in our marriages. And so the second thing that shows that we belong to God is that we are good Jews. We are good children of Abraham. So when the guy says, hey, listen, I can't come to this wedding banquet. I can't say yes to your invitation because I just got married. Well, what he's diving at is he's saying, I'm living out my relationship. So every Pharisee sitting around the table, when Jesus said that these are the excuses, he's hitting at what they're counting on. He's already hit at them being a Pharisee and being, you know, thinking they're better than everybody else. Take that off the table. That's not going to do it for you. And now we've got these other two things that are the great symbol, not just obeying the law, but the land and familial relationships. That's what we're counting on. Now, Jesus is saying, you can't count on those either. That's not what it's about. The invitation is not to count on the blessings that God has already poured in your life, like the land. The invitation is not to count on the relationships and the social connections that you've got. The invitation is just saying yes to Jesus. And these guys were saying no. We're not taking that invitation. We're going to count on obedience to the law and our moral strength. We're going to count on the blessing that God has offered in my life. Look at this land, and we're going to count on the relationships that we've got. And so Jesus says, that's the wrong way. That's not going to get you into the banquet. That's not going to get you into the kingdom. And so he tells his servant, you go out and you find the blind and the crippled and the lame, you find those that feel like they are outcasts to God, that the curse of God is upon their life, not the blessing of God. You find those very people that everyone else looks down on, and you bring them in. You bring them in because I want those people. And so they go and they bring all of these people that didn't think that they deserved to be at this incredible banquet. And the servants come back and they say, and this is the part I love the most, and they say, hey, you know what? We brought all those guys in, but there's still plenty of room. And what does God say? What does the owner say? He says, then you go out because I want my house full. I want every single person that will possibly even look in the right direction of saying yes to me. I want this party to be the grandest thing that ever. I want my house so crammed full we can barely eat the sandwiches before the preload. I want my house so full we can't even dance properly. You got to do it like I do it because there's no room to move around. I want everybody to come in here because I want this to be the greatest party that has ever existed in the entire existence of the universe itself. This party, this wedding feast is going to be bigger, grander, more glorious, more full of joy, more full of laughter, more full of happiness, more full of love, more full of kindness, more full of everything that is good than anything that has ever existed before. And I want my house full. And I won't be satisfied until I've turned over every rock and invited every person. You come because the kingdom is a party, and grace is on the menu. I suppose we all fit into one of those categories. Maybe you set yourself up as an enemy of Jesus, and you've spent time in your life looking for every excuse you can to say no to God, to be angry at God. What kind of a God would allow? What kind of a God would do? And you've carefully been watching the followers, these ragtag bunch that call themselves Christians. But somehow the Spirit's been working on your heart. And you're worried, man, I set myself up as an enemy. And I don't know. And Jesus says he just wants to come and sit with you and say, listen, friend, it's okay. I understood you were hurt. I understood this. Whatever. Just come to the party. I've got a seat with your name on it. You just come to the party. I know you were mad at me. It's okay. Just come to the party. There's grace for you. Or maybe you're kind of the opposite end of the spectrum. You've been counting on the fact that you're a good person. Pretty moral. Help everybody you can. Matter of fact, you'd never say it because it kind of sounds arrogant, but in your heart, it's like, I'm glad I'm better than this crew, and I'm glad I've got these connections, and I haven't missed church in I don't know how long, and I read my Bible every day, and suddenly you're realizing that you're kind of like one of these Pharisees that thinks that God's lucky to have you on his team. And now you're feeling embarrassed, and it's like, Jesus comes. He says, friend, it's okay. I appreciate some of the good that you've done. And this moral life you've lived, it's helped people, it's helped your life. It's okay. But now you realize that that's not what gets you into the banquet. And you feel maybe a little bit embarrassed that you're having some of those attitudes in your heart. I can forgive that. I got a seat at the banquet. And it's got your name on it. Won't you just come? Won't you just say yes? Because the kingdom of God's a party and grace is on the menu. Or maybe the next bunch, the lame, the crippled, the poor. And you've had stuff going on in your life and in your heart. And you think, I never get invited to a banquet with God.
Man, if people knew what was going on in my heart, if people knew the stuff that I'd done, if people understood the attitudes that I've held, nobody'd want to be around me. And God comes to you. And he says, listen, I know your heart. I know the brokenness of your life. I know that you feel like you've messed up every decision that you've ever made. But let me tell you something. There's a seat at this banquet. There's this party that I'm throwing. And I've got a place for you. And your name is on that seat, but you won't be sitting in the seat very long because we are going to dance eternity away. Won't you just come? Won't you just say yes to my invitation? Because there's grace for you. Because the kingdom is a party. And grace is on the menu. What a party. Now, I don't know where everyone's at. But I do know that the invitation's there. And I do know that grace is here. And I do know that the party has already kind of started. We can get a little bit of the appetizer right now. So if you're in the spot, you're in one of those things, and for whatever reason, you're like, I haven't said yes to the invitation. I'm going to go back over there. Can we come lead a song? And if you have a question, you want to say yes, whatever. I'll be back there. You just come and tell me or ask me or whatever, and we'll help you along to the next row. You know why? Because we can say it together. You ready? The kingdom is a party, and grace is on the menu. Almighty God, how can we, like Cam prayed just before I came up here, how can we even understand this? You are so good. You are so kind. You are so full of love. It's grace upon grace. For those of us that recognize we're sick, and for those of us that thought maybe we were doing okay, but eh. Lord, I just pray that this very day, all of us would go out of this place remembering that the kingdom is a party and it's grace that's on the menu. It's all about this incredible love and peace and kindness and forgiveness and embracing and healing and hope that you pour upon us. And I pray, Father, for those of us that have already said yes and are kind of participating in the appetizers of this party, that we would feel compelled to go and to tell everybody, hey, I know there's this and that, and there's all kinds of questions. But what I know is this, that the King of the universe says, I've got this kingdom party happening, and you're invited. Because grace is on the menu. Won't you say yes? Won't you just come? Because God wants his house full.